Dalad Teves. Oh no, Hey Teves. Hey Teves. Monday, this, Thursday. Let's start again here. Okay. Right, here we go. Hey Teves, Thursday the 2nd of January. Rabbi Nathanael Lieberman on several interesting facts from the Sedra.
I'm a P45.
Thank you very much indeed. Good morning, Rabbi Isai. If I can start Hakdoma with the very famous Medrash. The Posik tells us in this week's Sedra that Yosef said to his brothers, Ani Yosef ha'oid avichai, his brothers, they were so bewildered, they were so taken aback by the fact that he revealed himself to them that they were unable to respond. So there's a famous medrash, Omar Abba Kain Bardala, Abba Kain Bardala says, woe is to us the day of judgment, the day of reproof. If already Yosef, the youngest of the Shvatim, the brothers couldn't survive his reproof, his teichocha, his reproach, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes and tells everybody off according to what he is, alachas kamo v'kamo, all the more so. So the famous question is, where was the reproof here? Yosef was not giving teichocha to his brothers. All he said was, Ani Yosef, ha'oid avichai, asking about the welfare of his father. Why is this a teichocha? So the other day somebody told me of an incident of a person who was out late at night, had a bit too much to drink, and he drove home in his car. Unfortunately for him, the police were alert and they stopped him. They pulled him over on the side of the road and they were about to breathalyze him when over the radio the policeman got another call. So he said to this gentleman, please wait here while I deal with the other call, I'll be back shortly. So he waits 10 minutes, quarter of an hour, how long should he wait? And he just drove home. He arrives home and he says to his wife, if the police come calling, I've been home since 7 o'clock, stone sober. Fine. Within an hour, the police were at the front door, and the wife dutifully said, my husband's been home since 7 o'clock, everything's fine, don't know what you want. So the policeman said, how did he come home? He came home by car. Where's the car? He parked the car in the garage, locked it up in the garage. Do you mind if I have a look? So, no problem. So she brought the key, opened the garage, and there was the police car inside the garage. Yeah. Case proven. Did they need any teichocha in such a case? Did the policeman need to tell him off in such a case? The evidence was there before their eyes. Says the Beis Halevi, that's pshat here. I'm not sure if the Beis Halevi referenced that story, but the Beis Halevi says that's pshat here in the Medrash. That teichocha doesn't necessarily mean telling them off, you know, like in the headmaster's study, the pupil sitting there cringing. It's, he said to him, Ani Yosef, I'm Yosef. You're saying to me, I've got to give Binyamin back to you, because otherwise Avino Hazokin, our old father, what, you know, will he be able to withstand it? Will his health be able to cope with the fact that he's missing his Binyamin? Ah, Ani Yosef, I'm the same Yosef who you sold 20 years ago. And did you, 22 years ago, and did you think then of the ramifications? Did you think then, Ha'oid Avichai, is my father still alive? Did he manage to survive what you did to him then? He didn't actually need to say it. All he needed to say was the words, Ha'oid Yosef Chai. The evidence was there in front of their faces. And says the Medrash, Oilonu miyom hadin, Oilonu miyom atechecha, because in Yom Hadin will be the same thing. Kodesh Baruch Hu won't be there telling us off. Kodesh Baruch Hu will just be asking, did he give lots of money to Tzedakah? Well, we didn't have any spare money. Did he go on luxury holidays? The evidence will be there without HaKadosh Baruch Hu having to tell us off. And that's the same that happened here. Oid Yosef Chai, Oid Avichai, Yosef was asking, was Yaakovina still alive? And that itself was the proof that the brothers had done what they shouldn't do, what they shouldn't have done. But I'd like to focus, it was just Akdoma, I'd like to focus on the a few psukim later. In Perik Mem Zayin, Pasuk Zayin, Yaakov Avinu has come down to Mitzrayim, and Yosef, the viceroy, brought his father, Vayove Yosef is Yaakov Aviv. Yosef brought his father Yaakov, Vayomidu Lifnei Pharaoh, and he placed him in front of Pharaoh, Vayivorech Yaakov's Pharaoh, Yaakov gave Pharaoh Brocha. Vayome Pharaoh El Yaakov, Pharaoh said to Yaakov, how old are you? Kami Yimei Sheikha Yecha. Yeah? Imagine I walk in, good morning, Rav Shimon, how old are you? You're not likely to answer me, not likely to be impressed by the question. Very interesting question that he asked. Even more interesting is the response. Vayome Yaakov Aparoi, Yaakov answers back, Yimei Shnei Megurai Shloshim Ashona. I've been alive for 130 years. Question answered? Question answered. But yet he goes on. Ma'at v'royim hoyu yimei shnei chaya. There were few, there were bad, the days, the years of my life. V'lo yisigu es yimei shnei chaya avoysa b'yimei mugureyem, and I haven't reached the years of my fathers. What on earth is going on here? Why is Yaakov giving such a long response? So... No, I haven't. He's still alive. He doesn't know yet if he's going to. You're saying a pshat that he's telling us that he's not going to reach. Yeah, we'll come to it, Mitzvah Hashem. So the Moshe's Cain in Balatosis brings that what happened here is there's a piece missing from the conversation here. Something happened, the conversation started before what is recorded here in the Pasuk. And what happened earlier was the Yaakov Avinu asked permission from Paro that after the years of hunger are over, he should be able to go back to Hebron, to Kivrei Avosov. That's what he asked for. So Paro said to him, one minute, you're an old man. Do you think you'll still be alive? I presume he said in a polite way, do you think you'll still be alive by the time the years of hunger are over? In other words, you look such an elderly man, how come you're making such a condition? You're saying to me that you'd like to be able to go back, and otherwise, if I know now that I can't go back later, then I want to leave Mitzrayim immediately and just send my sons down to buy food. So he asked him, how old are you? So to that, Yaakov Avinu answered, I'm 130 years old, and you might think that I look a lot older than that. I'm not really so old, but the reason why I look so old is because I've had a difficult life. Ma'at v'royim, and because I had the sorrows of Esau, the sorrows of Lavan, I lost my son Yosef, I had sorrows all my life, therefore I look much older than I am. And the Das Kena Balatosis brings from the Medrash, that because of that, Yaakov Avinu was punished. That because he said what sounded like he was complaining Chaviyochel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because of that, he taka lost 33 years of his life. All the Ovid should have lived to 180. Yitzhak Avinu lived to 180. Avram Avinu died 5 years earlier, so you shouldn't see Esau going Letar Basra. And Yaakov Avinu died at 147, 33 years early, because of what he said here. And it says the Das Kanim, that if you look in the Pasuk, you'll see that this conversation, which I read out, has 33 words. Keneged these 33 words in the Torah, he lost 33 years of his life. Now, Rav Moshe Sternbuch Shlita says that one shouldn't think, chas v'sholem, that Yaakov Avinu was here letting out his frustration, kaviyochel, against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ma'at v'royim ha'yu yimei shnei chaya. What he was saying was different, he says in Tam V'das. What he was saying was that I would have loved to spend much more time devoted to learning. If I would be able to spend my life devoted to learning, devoted to Avodas Hashem, that's the proper life. That would have given me great pleasure. Then I would have looked and felt much younger. But unfortunately, because I had so much sorrows, therefore I wasn't able to reach the madrigas of my fathers before me and to be able to sit and learn with the same Menuchas HaNefesh and Shalvas HaNefesh. Alternatively, he says, the second pshat, he says, is that Yaakov Avinu was... He was introduced as the father, the viceroy, he was Malchus, he was Korev Malchus. So he didn't want an Ein Hora. So because he didn't want an Ein Hora, he said, I've been alive 130 years, but in case you start, you want to be jealous of me, Ein Hora, or whatever, I want to say it wasn't all so simple. I didn't have such a wonderful life. There's nothing to be jealous of. Those are the Mahalchim that Moshe Shtemlich says. Now, I saw another pshat that the Shagazaria says. The Shagazaria himself had an extremely difficult life. He moved from place to place. He was a no-compromiser, and sometimes it didn't last long in the various gehillas that he served as Rav. When he was 70 years old, it was arranged that he should put himself forward for the position as Rav of Metz in France. And he arrived in Metz for an interview, and they took one look at him, and he could see their faces fell. They were hoping for a young, vibrant Rav who would come and lead the Gehillah for at least another generation. And here was an elderly man, a 70-year-old man, coming to them. So they sort of looked at him, that look, and he said to them, I'll address it at a drosh on Shabbos. And that Shabbos was Parshas Vayigash, and he quoted these psukim, and he said to them slightly different. He says that what was going on here was that Paro, when he said, Kama yimei shnei chayecha, Yaakov understood that there was something behind the question. He wasn't only asking him for his age because that was his way of socializing. What was happening here was that Paro saw that when Yaakov Avinu came down to Mitzrayim, there was suddenly a shefa. The Nilus was oiling across, the river Nile rose to meet him. The famine stopped. A new era had arrived in Mitzrayim with the arrival of Yaakov Avinu. And Paro wanted it to last. And yet Yaakov Avinu didn't look a young man. So therefore he asked him, Kamo yimei shnei chayecha, how old are you? So he says to him, don't worry, I'm only 130 years old, I look older than I am, it's because I've had a difficult life, but don't worry, I'm here to stay, it'll be alright. I don't know if you said the words, but basically, don't worry, the shefa will continue. Said the Shagasaria to the Gehillah there, I might look like an old man, but I'll be here many years to lead the Gehillah, and he led the Gehillah for another 20 years until he was 90. If we can go off at a tangent here, though, at the time that he was there in Metz, he made a condition and he said to them, I'd like you to set up a library for me. I'd like you to provide me with sforim in order that I should be able to sit and learn Karoi. Now, in those days, we're talking about close to 300 years ago, in those days there weren't that many sforim around and people didn't have shasim, Baruch Hashem, we have them b'shefa nowadays, but in those days to get a shas was something special. There was this lady who lived in Metz, and she, when she got married into a rich family, and she made a condition of the marriage that her husband would get together a shas. Now in those days you got one volume here, one volume there. After many years, he managed to put together a full shas. Now that she had this shas, she opened up a gemach, a shas gemach. And whoever needed svarim came to her and she would lend them the volume that they needed. And the Shagasaria came to borrow svarim from her. And she realized that he was an odd godel, and she said to him, I don't want to bother you to come to me. If you need a sefer, you need a volume of shas, send a shliach and I'll come and bring it to you. And Kachava, she brought it to him. And he was extremely grateful to her, and he gave her a bracha that she should have two sons. One son who would be boki in the whole shas, and would need a shas himself, and the other one who would be able to be mefalpil, who would be an oika horim, a sinai and an oika horim. And Kachava, she was the mother of Reb Chaim Voloshin and his brother Reb Zalman Voloshin. Reb Chaim Voloshin was known as a Boki B'Shatz, and Reb Zalman Voloshin was known as a Amkin. There's a famous pshat also in these psukim from Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz says that what happened here, he asked the question that why is it that Yaakov Avinu lost 33 years of his life. To lose 33 years of his life It's because there are 33 extra words in the Torah. Those 33 extra words include Vayomer Pare El Yaakov, Kama Yemei Shnei Chayecha. They include Pare speaking to him. So why is Yaakov Avinu guilty for Pare spoke to him? Answers Reb Chaim Shmulevitz that when Yaakov Avinu walked in, instead of looking young and sprightly at 130, instead he looked old. He looked as if he had had lots of tzoras. So because he looked old, that prompted the question from Paro. So because he was responsible for prompting the question from Paro, therefore not only did he get punished for the answer that he gave, Ma'at v'royim v'lo yisigu, that I didn't live as long as my father's, I haven't managed to live as long as my father's yet, but he was also punished for what Paro said to him. That's the famous vote of Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. Now, we have to be extremely careful here. I have to be extremely careful here. We're talking about Yaakov Avinu, and we're talking about Keilu Yaakov Avinu did terrible Averis here. I once heard from Reb Dov Sternbuch Shlita in Gates said something which will put this into perspective. Earlier in Parshas Vayetze, it says, in Perek Chof Tes, Pasuk Yud Aleph, it says that Yaakov Avinu arrived he was at the Be'er there and he was speaking to the shepherds. And Rochel turned up because she was a shepherd. So when Yaakov Avinu saw Rochel, what he did was he rolled the stone off the mouth of the well and gave the sheep to drink. Next Pasuk says, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayishak Yaakov L'Rochel. Yaakov kissed Rochel. Yaakov kissed Rochel? He just met her. Might be a little relative that he's met, but you know. Yaakov Avinu, Vayisha Yaakov L'Rochel. A few psukim later, it says, after Lavan had fooled Yaakov Avinu and given Leah instead of Rochel, so Yaakov says to Lavan, Pasuk Chavala, Vayomer Yaakov Lavan, Havas Ishti, Kimolo Yomai, Vavoya Eleho. So says Rashi, very strange expression, the way he should speak to Lavan. The lowest of the low doesn't speak in such vulgar language. Because he was getting older and he wanted to have children. But Rashi doesn't say anything in the previous pasuk. So Rav Dov Sternbuch told us, and I think he said it in the name of Rav Dessler Zecharein Levrocha, his Rebbe, and he says as follows: we mustn't chas v'sholem measure the Oves HaKdoshim in the same midas as we ourselves live with. The Oves HaKdoshim were way, way, way beyond our mesogim. And the raya is, he says, because the Torah says Vayishak Yaakov L'Rochel. Of course Yaakov did not kiss this girl who he met at the Be'er, no such thing. Why does the Torah say Vayishak Yaakov L'Rochel? On the Madrega of Yaakov Avinu, who did a mashu of a mashu of, he looked at her, glanced at her out the side of his eye, and there was a little bit of a stir of emotion, a millionth of a flutter, whatever it was. That itself, already at the Madrega of Yaakov Avinu, that's considered what we would understand as Vayishak Yaakov L'Rochel. Because they're on a different planet, the Oves HaKdoshim, therefore their actions are Kodesh Baruch Hu's medaktik with them in a totally different way to the way we understand it. And when they do something absolutely, absolutely minor, the Torah already writes it as if it was a major thing, Vayishak Yaakov L'Rochel. So therefore here as well, bearing that in mind, when we speak here about how Yaakov Avinu, so to speak, sinned by saying that I had such a terrible life, you have to bear in mind that we heard before that he meant it with Derech Hanover, that he didn't manage to learn as much as his fathers used to. But nevertheless, because he made such an impression in the eyes of Paro, already he got this terrible punishment that he received, that he lost 33 years of his life. Instead, Yaakov, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, Yaakov Avinu should have, as we explained in his Madrega, should have appeared to be much calmer and relaxed despite all the tzoras that happened to him. Now when one thinks about calm and relaxed, and one thinks about what the opposite of that, Naveza people get very nervous. The Brisker off springs to mind. People think that in Brisk people get very nervous. The Brisker off was in Warsaw during the Second World War, and the bombs were flying. The Germans were attacking. The bombs were flying. People couldn't work out whether to sleep upstairs, whether to sleep in the bomb shelters, which one was safer. The Brisker off was about the only person in the whole Kehilla there in Warsaw who went to sleep calmly on a as if it was a regular night. And his Mekorovim, his Mishmocha, asked him, how can you just go to sleep when all this is happening? So he says that when David was suffering from Avshalom, as we say, Hashem Morav Tzorei Rabin Komi Olai, what does he say? Ani Shachavdi Voishono, I went to bed, as we say in Krishma Lamita, Kisezi, Ki Hashem Yismecheini, Hashem looks after me, everything's all right. So he was asked, but it's Bikuach Nefesh. How can you be so calm? It's Bikuach Nefesh. So Briskerov explained as follows. Bikuach Nefesh means that it's extremely important that every Yid has to do whatever he can to make sure he stays alive. V'chai b'hem, we're supposed to stay alive in order to increase our chances of doing, to have a chance of doing mitzvahs, ma'asim tovim. A person is supposed to do his best to stay alive. We are now in a situation here in Warsaw where there's no difference if I go there, if I go here, upstairs, downstairs, every place is a cheska sakona. There's nothing more I can do in order to make sure I'm mekayim the mitzvah of chai b'hem. So therefore this whole pikuach nefesh goes out the window. So now all we do is we rely on Hashem. Hashem will look after us. There's no reason why I shouldn't go to bed in my regular bed and why I shouldn't sleep my regular sleep. And he slept as if absolutely nothing was happening. And very similarly, a few years later, in 1948, when the Jordanians were bombing Yerushalayim, a very similar incident happened, that in the middle of the bombardment, he announced he's going out to this medrash to fetch a sefer. They said, what, fetch a sefer? It's dangerous outside, how can you go? But again, the same terrors, complete and absolute. There's no difference if I'm here, if I'm there. There's bombardment in the houses, bombardment in the streets. I rely fully and totally on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's the Madrega which is expected of us. Another thing we see from here is that Yaakov Avinu, according to Reb Chaim Shmulevich, explains Yaakov Avinu was held responsible, so to speak, for the fact that he looked old. The effect that we make on other people is so extremely important. And that's in the communal world, and it's also in the individual world. I was once in Exeter for summer holidays and decided to have a look around at the various Jewish places of interest in the southwest of England. Unfortunately, most of those places are old cemeteries, not it was. And I travelled to Falmouth, which is not far from Land's End. And in Falmouth, there was a Besuch Forest. I think the last time it was used was in 1913. It's on the outskirts of the city, Mechutz La'ir. And it used to be, it was described in the books as being extremely overgrown. And that was until about a year before I got there. What happened was, a year before I got there, there was a Ford garage right next door to the Besuch. And the non-Jewish manager of the Ford garage decided that he's going to look after this Jewish cemetery. And he erected a new fence, he cleaned up the whole area, straightened everything up, took out the litter, etc., made it look a respectable place, and kept a visitor's book, a fascinating visitor's book, to see who had been in the area. And so I asked, what was the story? How come this non-Jewish person was interested? So Mr. Alf Dunitz, Zichron Livracha, used to work voluntarily for the United Synagogue and looked after many of these far-flung Gothic forests. He said the story was as follows. So what happened was this manager of the Ford garage, before his job in Falmouth, he had a job 250 miles away in North London in Stamford Hill. And along Stamford Hill, there's a Ford garage, Ford main dealers there next to what's now Morrison's. I think it's now Vauxhall. And he was so impressed by the Holechielech, by the behaviour, the general conduct of the community there in Stamford Hill, that when he moved 250 miles away to Falmouth, he thought to himself, next door I've got this Jewish Beis Olam, I'm going to look after it. And his own expense, his own initiative, he went and looked after that basic forest, all because of the Kiddush Hashem, all the Yidden in that area had made. Because if some Yidden would have dealt with him in a way which he felt was inappropriate, he wouldn't have had such an opinion. It's only because you have the communal thing, and I'm sure it's happened to all of us, I know it's happened to myself. I once went into the post office in Gateshead at the time to get child benefit, and you needed your book, and I didn't have a book, or I didn't have identification, I don't know what it was I didn't have. So the non-Jewish person behind the counter says, I trust you people. I trust you people. And it happens, I'm sure it happens to everybody. I once forgot to take money with me to the petrol station. So I filled up my car with petrol and came to pay. I didn't have any money. So I said, I'll leave my car here. I'll walk home. I'll be back in an hour. He says, you don't need to walk home. Take your car with you. I trust you people. There's only I trust you people because every single Yid beforehand who he's dealt with has dealt in an honourable way. So therefore, at a communal level, we see how important it is, the effect that we have on other people. And if I can just conclude by repeating what I read many years ago from Rabbi Pesach Kron. He says there was this Rav in Dallas, in Texas, who was sitting in his Beis HaMedrash, and a Ben Torah had come from the Chofetz Chaim Kol to open a minyan there. And somebody walked in, didn't look very frum, and he wants to have a chat with the rabbi. Right? So they had a chat. He'd like to give a donation to the synagogue. Donation, very nice. He'd like to give $2,000. $2,000, somebody doesn't know. But doesn't have his checkbook with him. He'll be back. And off he goes. Yeah? So we've all heard those stories before. And the Rav didn't believe he'd be back. He came back a week later and he said, I've decided to increase my donation to $3,000. And from then on he became closer to Yiddishkeit and a strong supporter of the shul. He was Nebuch Nifter Young, and his family built a shul in his honour. And at the Shloshim, after the family had arranged to donate the money in his honour, the Rav told the following story. He says, you might want to know why this person felt so close to our shul. And he said, what happened was as follows. In the days before he was frum, he went on a trip to Israel, Eretz Yisrael. He went to Yerushalayim, he went to the Kosel, and he goes to the Kosel, not quite sure what to do there. But what he saw at the Kosel was that this Yerushalmi Yid, wearing a talis, was davening away to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, davening away to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with a zad veikus, and you could see that he felt close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he was overwhelmed, this non-frum person. And he felt, I'm losing out here. I don't have this connection to Ruchnius that this person has with his God, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I should be the same. I should be like that. And that stirred something within him. And that's what started it. And he went back to Texas. And he went to a Jewish friend. And he says, told him the story. And he said, that Yerushalmi Jew, what synagogue would he pray in here in Dallas? So they referred him to this Rabbi Rogan Shul. And he went to speak to the Rav, and that was the start of the thing. Said Rabbi Rodin, this Yid comes to Olam HaEmes, this Yerushalmi Yid comes to Olam HaEmes, and they weigh up his mitzvahs and his ma'asim tovim, and on the scale of his mitzvahs is providing for a shul in Dallas, Texas. Dallas? Texas? Yerushalmi Yid? He doesn't know where Texas is, he doesn't know where Dallas is. No, because of the way he conducted himself, made such an impression on somebody else, and that's what caused this whole ripple effect. Who knows what effect we can have by being Yosha, by serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu correctly, how we can be Mekadosh Shem Shemayim, and in Yitz Hashem, that should stand us in good stead. Thank you very much.